It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Well, indeed, it is hump day. Welcome to the show. This is the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. We have great stuff on the website. We've got our op-eds, Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast, as well as our Headlines for Hope podcast. So be sure and check that out. And sign up for our weekly newsletter. You talk about a lot of information there. You get it first there. And so you can sign up on that at the website as well. We've got a really important show planned for you today. We'll be talking with Tim McCormick. He is the candidate for district attorney in Adams and Broomfield County. And these are very important races. George Soros has been all over these district attorney races while many of us have not been paying attention. And so we will be talking with Tim McCormick in the second segment. We'll go through some headlines in the first segment. And then Cheryl Akison, you know her. She is the host of Full Measure, which is on a variety of different outlets on Sundays. Former CBS investigative reporter. She was actually being spied on by the U.S. government during the previous administration. And so we'll be talking about the General Flynn issue. So you won't want to miss that. That's in segments 3 and 4. As we look at these things, producer Steve, I want to say thank you to you and the team, to you, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, for all your good work. And as we're going through these headlines, trying to find the truth in all of this is, it's more than a full-time job, Steve.
Well, it goes without saying, a ship obviously needs a crew, but the crew needs a captain. You're the captain, we're the crew. It's just a pleasure to serve with you.
Well, we have so many things that we can talk about. And you listeners, each of you, you're treasured, you're valued. You have a purpose. Be industrious, productive today. Take care of heart, soul, mind, and body, and search for truth as well, which really goes to our quote every day. I think it's important to look at these with Rudyard Kipling. He says, I keep 6 honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who. And this other quote that a fellow Liberty Toastmasters member shared with me is, fear knocked at the door, truth answered, and there was no one there. And so we're walking through this whole COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption and just really working to discern what is truth and what is not. And it seems like they keep moving the goalpost on all of this. So we're always working towards freedom and actually liberty, because liberty is the responsible exercise of freedom. And so we look at this as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And they've now put fear in there. And so we really are at a critical time in our country. And remember, it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether it's with a weapon, policy, or unpredictable excessive taxation or fear. If something is a good idea, then we should not need to have force to implement it. And it is really time for us to start to engage. We always talk about reaching out to our state representatives and our congressmen and our senators. But there's really the place that these decisions are really being made is on the local level, at the county level, as well as all of these different health departments. And these are the places that we need to start to engage by making phone calls and text messages and handwritten notes. I was in a meeting recently, and one of the folks there really, really recommended phone calls and then a handwritten note instead of an email. He said that actually your representatives really will really take note of that. Emails, not so much, because they get so many of those. So think of that, Steve, a handwritten note. Isn't that a novel idea?
If you wait long enough, all these things will, you know, the wheel will, we will have gone full circle, I guess, is the way to say it.
Exactly, exactly. So jumping in here, our quote for today is from Cheryl Akison, and this is from her book, Stonewalled, One Reporter's Fight for Truth in Obama's Washington. And she said, she is an American writer and host of the TV show Full Measure. She's a five-time Emmy Award winner and the RTNDA Edward R. Murrow Award recipient. She was formerly an investigative correspondent in Washington for the CBS News and a substitute anchor for the CBS Evening News. This is what she said. In reality, for those who bother to look, history and experience teach that the biggest dose of skepticism should be reserved for the authorities that seek to influence us and the information they want us to receive. I think that's another way of talking about Rudyard Kipling's quote, don't you, Steve?
Yep. I came across an excellent one the other day, and I really wish I would have snagged it, because it was a great parallel to the Kipling quote. And it just, you know, basically said, I know because I'm paying attention, was, you know, the bottom line. And know a plethora of different things. But what's going on in this country right now? What situations are being politicized because it's an election year? I was talking with our friend Matt here at KLTT yesterday. I said, how much of this baloney, this malarkey, these shenanigans would we be seeing right now if this was not an election year?
Good point. I think that you've really hit the nail on the head, but that's really difficult as they have people so scared. And a couple of things here.
Well, yeah, and back to Rahm Emanuel's comments made, you know, how many years ago? Never let a good crisis go to waste. And the fear is a tool.
And there is a doubling down. I know that Tri-County Health is out there really trying to influence all of these different local jurisdictions to put in these mandatory face coverings, edicts out there. And they're trying to get everybody on board to do that. Because if everybody does it, then it looks like it's effective. But, you know, one of the points that Patty had made is after that big rally down at the Capitol, we should have seen a spike in the COVID cases, or right before the edict went in to shut Colorado down and everybody had run to the grocery store and the markets, we should have seen a spike there as well. So as we're looking at this, we're kind of like, things are not matching up. When I asked for information from our city manager here in Lone Tree and city council about the data to back up their decision to put in mandatory face coverings here in Lone Tree, I asked for the actual data, and they said, well, go to the CD site and the Tri-County Health site. But now we look at, there was a recent, I guess it was a couple of days ago, Dr. Deborah Birx, who, you know, has been advising the president regarding COVID-19. She and Dr. Fauci, she has said that she thinks the CDC may be inflating the numbers by 25%. So as we're drawing, you know, connecting the dots here, we're relying on data that looks like it might be inflated to make decisions to take people's freedom and shut down their livelihood. Something isn't matching up on this, Steve.
Well, again, how much more bad news can there be out there to know that the government is basically fudging the numbers to, you know, so make their stick bigger, you know, a bigger stick to do whatever it is, the nefarious things that they've got out there. And it's just, again, I'm reaching the saturation point.
Well, we need to be paying attention to this. Now, this is from Mises.org. And the title is, When Governments Switch Their Story from Flatten the Curve to Lockdown Until There's a Vaccine. And so that's where the narrative has changed. We needed to shut down the economy to flatten the curve, take away people's livelihoods to flatten the curve. But, you know, who really got shut down was the small to mid-sized businesses. Your big boxes, your in which, you know, I'm glad that we still had them open. But the point is it was very arbitrary. And arbitrary, there's really no truth in that. That doesn't mean that people are really working towards trying to find a solution. It's more that they were using their power on this. And so there is one other thing. Oh, it's Governor Pritzker in Illinois, basically, he said that he wants to shut down the Illinois economy, which they're reeling. I mean, they have made so many bad decisions there, and that he wants to shut down the economy until there's a vaccine. And Steve, I know this is, I mean, this is really connecting a dot. You know, we go back pre-COVID-19 Wuhan virus, and we were seeing all these forced vaccination pieces of legislation being presented throughout our country. And it really, you say, well, how did that happen? It's what's called cut and paste. There's these organizations that are out there that are pushing for different agendas, and they basically cut and paste that legislation, and then they push it through. And you know, I saw real danger in forced vaccinations because, once again, it doesn't, it, you know, free market holds products accountable. And so don't you find it kind of curious that back then they were talking about forced vaccinations, and now this narrative has moved from flatten the curve to we can't open up until we have a vaccination? You know, stay tuned, but be sure and keep your eye on this. I think that connecting this dot is really important. And of course, just bear in mind, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has been working on a COVID-19 vaccination. It's like, how did they know that? So we're going to, hey, that was one of our questions. How did they know that, Steve?
Yeah. He's drawing more and more negative press. Well, hopefully he's drawing more, but it makes you think, what, number one, what is wrong with the status quo, Bill? You have made how much money in your career and the things you've been doing. And now some of these other things are starting to pop out of the woodwork in this one world government thing that you're pushing. And yeah, okay, now we know what you're doing with your money, and it's not good.
Well, yeah, so stay tuned. Did you notice we are starting to have those words? What, why, how? So that's really important. We're going to go to break, though. Before we do that, you know, it has really been, it's tough on our small restaurants and our businesses, our taverns. And so a couple of things. First of all, go to my website. Jen Hewlin, you know, she is taking a stand. She's a real patriot. She's one of my partners with Water's Edge Winery. And it'd be great if you threw over there the cost of a cup of coffee to help her with her legal expenses as well as her operating costs. And then another very valued partner of mine is Hooters Restaurants. And I know, Steve, you've done this. I have as well. Go to order.hooters.com, and you can order dinner to go. You can drive up. You can pick it up. Today it's Wednesday, which is wing day. And you can order 20 wings and get 10 for free. And also, kids eat free when you order an adult entree. So be sure and go to order.hooters.com and have dinner cooked that way. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Tim McCormick. He is candidate for the district attorney in Adams and Broomfield counties. These are very important races. We want to keep our community safe. So we'll be talking with Tim about what's going on in our justice arena. And we'll be right back.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
A recent study finds that COVID-19 economic disruption could force half of small businesses to close within 6 months. Local small business owner Jen Hewlin, Water's Edge Winery, who pledged her home for the loan to start her business, chose to fully open her business last week. As a reasonable individual, she had agreed to a pause in her business until we could better understand COVID-19. The curve has been flattened. There are enough respirators. Effective treatments are available. But the bureaucrats at Tri-County Health said no and shut her down. Jen is fighting for her economic life. Help her with legal costs and operating expenses. Go to KimMunson.com for the link to help Jen through her crowdfunding campaign.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Podcasts of the shows are there, as well as our op-eds, all kinds of great information. Go over to Facebook and give us a like. I'm very thrilled to have on the line with me Tim McCormick. He is candidate for district attorney in Adams and Broomfield County. And my friends, these races are so important. George Soros knows that. He has been putting money behind candidates in different district attorney races throughout the country. And criminal justice is so important. So, Tim McCormick, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Kim. Thank you for having me on, and good morning to your listeners as well. Thank you.
Well, tell us a little bit. I know we've had you on the show before, but tell us a little bit about yourself and why you are running for district attorney.
Sure. I was born in Great Falls, Montana. I graduated from Grand Junction High School. I received my degrees at Colorado State University in accounting, and then I went and got my law degree at Creighton University School of Law. I practiced law in both Wyoming and Colorado, and we've raised our family here in Adams County for the past 20 years. And it's real simple why I'm running. I'm not a politician, Kim. I'm a prosecutor, and as far as I'm concerned, all politics should be left at the courthouse steps. Now, I'm running for district attorney for Adams and Broomfield counties because of my proven track record of experience and integrity to provide the kind of servant leadership to the communities, you know, in which I live and have worked and that they deserve. I have firmly held that the position of district attorney shouldn't be about politics, political affiliations, political opportunities, or a launching pad for a political career. It should be about who is best equipped to provide our communities with the best public safety. And I'm the most experienced prosecutor and attorney in this race. And it kind of goes to what you said in the lead-in with Soros-backed and funded DA races. You know, you look around the country, even here in our own backyard, you have activist DAs. And that's a problem. I don't think it's true to the criminal justice system. And I think when you look around, there's a lot of issues, and we don't need that here in Colorado, specifically here in Adams and Broomfield County.
Well, so Tim McCormick, one of the things that we keep seeing in different headlines, and this was in Colorado politics just recently, is that there are organizations out there that are trying to get Governor Polis to reduce the prison population. They're calling it for because they want to keep prison populations safe. What's your comments about that?
Well, that's interesting because I don't. There was a story here a couple of days ago where it wasn't in our state, thank goodness, but I could see it work here because criminals have a pretty good, pretty strong network, and news travels fast on how to, you know, be creative in breaking the law. But individuals were going into the jail and sharing cups and sharing from water fountains and things like that in an effort to get the virus in hopes that that would necessitate a quick release from jail. You know, Kim, I do have some concerns about that. My whole campaign is about public safety and about restoring that as a top priority to the office of Adams and Broomfield counties. And one of the concerns I have is that this has become weaponized. It has become used to just in and out, kind of a revolving door. Now, we had a conversation a couple weeks ago, and it was kind of in the middle of this. Back in March, it was a very collaborative effort, and it still is, between the defense bar, the public defenders, the courts, and our offices, about getting people in and getting nonviolent or low-level crimes, you know, giving them the bond necessary to get out of jail, or giving them what we call a personal recognizance bond, provided that they have in place a support system where they're just not turned out back onto the street. Now, you know, we've been kind of under this umbrella of safe at home, stay at home for, I'd say, what, about 6 weeks. And already we're starting to see repeat offenders. And they got this bond, they got out, and within a couple of weeks, they're back in, you know, and they go through the same argument, and they get back in. So I think it's a case-by-case basis. I am absolutely opposed to a blanket release, and I don't think that – I think at this point right now, if you look around the state, the district attorneys are doing a very good job of analyzing their cases and fighting back, right, when it's necessary, and there's a concern with public safety, because everybody talks about the concern with the virus and stuff, but – you know, there's other factors that are involved in that. And one of the big factors we look at is, A, their criminal history, and B, whether or not they failed to appear in courts in the past. So
that responsibility. And just a quick question. We have just a couple of minutes. And that is, mm-hmm. I've heard that the courts may not be meeting like they normally do because of this COVID-19 thing. So are things backed up there?
Well, that's a great question. And the answer to your question is yes. You know, we've had kind of a court shutdown, and you know, jury trials have been continued, postponed, whatever you want to call it. And recently the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court came out and now even pushed that back further to July 6th. So your court's on a very limited operating schedule right now. And it's very difficult to get cases in and to get them dealt with. It's dealing mostly with those folks that are in custody, people that are out of custody. We keep postponing it down. And I'm concerned that, you know, once if we kind of get back up to an operating schedule, normal operating schedule, it's really going to be a burdensome aspect on the court. And then recent articles talk about how, you know, even on the civil side of things, people are taking advantage even of that, of the courts being closed, not complying with court orders, you know, for like child visitation and things of that nature. So, yeah, it's a real concern. And I think if you ask district attorneys around the state, they're really concerned about the future here in the next couple months if they open it up.
Well, and I think that's why we really need to have people like you as district attorneys that are going to stay focused on justice and not be politicizing the office. So, Tim McCormick, how can people help you?
Well, thank you, Kim. They can certainly go to and check out my website, McCormick for D-A, McCormackforda .com. There's contact information on there. They can find out what I'm about, what I stand for. And as I always say, know your candidates, know their agenda, know who's backing them and the reasons why they're being backed that way. I want to just mention a couple other things, Kim. I'm very humbled in our campaign this week. We received an FOP endorsement from the Broomfield Police Department. Kim, I've been endorsed now unanimously across Adams and Broomfield County by all the police FOPs in the jurisdiction. And we're very happy about that. We're very proud. We also picked up the endorsement of Mayor Jan Kuhlman from Thornton, a wonderful lady, really cares about her public safety, cares about her community. I mean, we're very, very happy. Very good week.
Oh, fantastic. So great. Tim McCormick, we will talk to you again here in a few weeks. Thank you so much.
All right, Kim, you have a great day, and your listeners as well. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you. And let's jump over here. John Buckingham with Presidential Wealth Management. You are manning the fort this week while Jason McBride is taking some time off. John Buckingham, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
I want to jump right in. The Fed, it looks like they're going to be giving us some comments later today. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think the main thing that people are looking for right now is for Powell to comment on the push for negative interest rates that we're seeing from D.C. a little bit right now. So I would expect that he would, again, nix the whole idea of going to negative rates just because of the potential trap that you can fall into with that. And, you know, we certainly want to avoid that for a potential ammunition, if you will, in our arsenal going forward here. So I think that realistically, he's going to squash that idea. The market is pricing in negative interest rates right now just because they think eventually he's going to cave in, which he's done in the past. So hopefully that doesn't happen, but that's kind of what we're expecting. So very good time to take a look at portfolios and make sure that everything's positioned the way you want them right now.
Oh, my gosh, that's for sure. Because negative interest rates, ultimately, would that cause inflation down the road?
It's potential. Right now, the main concern is deflationary environment, and that's why the push is there for them to go negative. But there's other tools that they can use to keep us from a deflationary cycle without investors having to pay the government to borrow money from them, which just is insane on the, you know, top, and just really doesn't understand or it's really hard to understand why anyone would want to pay the government to borrow money from them. But, you know, that's what we're trying to avoid here.
Okay. Well, I would certainly recommend that people sit down with you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management and do a portfolio check, as this is such a crazy time. And people can reach you, John, at, let's see, what's that phone number?
It's 303-694-1600.
Yes, 303-694-1600, or we have our landing page together, that is airpresidential.com. So, John Buckingham, it'll be interesting what the market has to say about this later today, and we'll talk again tomorrow morning.
That sounds good. We'll talk to you then.
Have a great day. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Cheryl Akison.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
We get so caught up in today's troubles that we lose perspective. Have a little hope. Go to klzradio.com now and download Christ of Every Crisis. In less than 30 pages, you will be reminded that you can't control everything in your life, and that's okay. Instead of worrying, you can learn to trust God. Go to klzradio.com now and download Christ of Every Crisis for free. A gift of hope from KLZ Crawford Broadcasting and the ministry of Adrian Rogers.
If you change your mind,
take a chance
on the first in line. Honey, I'm still free. Take a chance on me.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And go over to Facebook and give us a like and sign up for my weekly email newsletter. I am thrilled to have on the line with me, you know her, Cheryl Akison. She is the host of Full Measure with Cheryl Akison. It's broadcast in different markets on Sundays, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, CW, and Telemundo, and also online. Cheryl Akison, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You have really been watching what's been happening with the whole General Flynn situation. And, of course, just recently, it looks like the charge against him is going to be dropped. Could you explain to us exactly what this charge was that he pled guilty to, and then what is happening now with Attorney General William Barr?
Well, for a little bit of context, Kim, he used to be in the Obama administration, Lieutenant General Flynn, as head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, where he got fired over, in part, a dispute that they were not allowed to say Islamic extremist terrorism. And he felt strongly, he said, that you have to name the enemy to defeat them. So that's how he fell out. He's a Democrat, how he fell out of favor with the Obama administration. He later came to the attention of the Trump administration. And he was apparently going to be hired, but before he was hired, after President Trump was elected, there was a meeting with President Obama and Trump. And after the meeting, President Obama reportedly had told Trump not to hire Flynn for some reason. This is before Flynn had any conversations with anybody or did any of the acts that he was charged with later. So he had a target on him from the beginning. And I will say, just based on what I've learned from inside sources, I think a lot of this was because they knew in the intelligence community Flynn was going to come in and clean house. He knew where bodies were buried. He thought there were a lot of abuses going on. And he was going to make big changes, so certain people were desperate to not let him do that with President Trump. So once he became President Trump's national security advisor, he had conversations, none of which were deemed or are illegal, had conversations with many other countries' heads of state, or at least their ambassadors and so on, as they prepared to take office during the transition, and some conversations were with Russia's ambassador. Russia's ambassador meets with Democrats and Republicans all over town. He gets around a lot, doing a lot of his, you know, lobbying for Russia and talking with politicians and administration officials. And the dispute came over the content of two of the phone calls or conversations in which Flynn either did or didn't talk about sanctions, because right before he left office, President Obama put sanctions against Russia for their alleged interference attempts. And according to some reports, Flynn asked Russia not to take retaliatory action against the United States for that before Trump got into office, so that they could start fresh and try to have a decent relationship. And the Russians reportedly agreed not to retaliate, you know, before Trump took office. So later, the FBI conspired to, we now know based on notes, in an effort to maybe get Trump, or as some handwritten note said, maybe to try to get him to lie so they could get him fired or prosecute him. They visited him in what seemed to be maybe an unofficial meeting at the White House, but unbeknownst to Flynn, he was subject to a formal investigation about his Russia contacts, none of which were ever deemed to be improper or illegal. But because he allegedly lied about them or told the FBI agents in the conversation that he didn't say certain things, they then, somebody leaked to the press that Flynn had lied to them and lied to Vice President Pence about the content of the phone calls, saying he hadn't discussed sanctions when he supposedly had. How did the government know, the Obama administration, that he had supposedly had these discussions? Well, they were monitoring the calls. The intelligence agencies were recording and monitoring them. Somebody leaked General Flynn's mask name to the public, which is illegal for that to be done, because mask names of people captured incidentally during surveillance are supposed to be protected, the American names, when other people are being surveilled, like the foreign Russian ambassador. So I don't know. I don't know if I made that simple or not, but Flynn, in the end, says he didn't lie and that he pled guilty because they were threatening to prosecute his son. They bled him dry, you know, getting legal representation, which is very expensive. The Department of Justice, I know firsthand, can, you know, spend unlimited money. And then you know, there's no way you can go up against that. And then other prosecutorial misconduct has arisen, not just with Flynn, but with other things that happened, or FBI misconduct. So he tried to drop his plea. He even has a dispute with his former attorneys that represented him when he pled guilty. Eric Holder, the former attorney general for President Obama, is part of that firm, as are other political figures. And he suspects, although they deny, that there was some political play involved in the people representing him, that they were not doing a good job. And they've been withholding many documents from his new lawyer, Sidney Powell. So that's the basics.
Okay, so first of all, I did not know that General Flynn was a Democrat, and I guess that doesn't really matter one way or another, but in all this partisan stuff that's going on, I just find that kind of interesting. But regarding this phone calls, I mean, he knew that they were being surveilled, because that's very common, isn't it, that those kinds of calls would be surveilled. So this quote-unquote lie, and my understanding, Cheryl, is that he pled guilty to just one count of really more of a process crime. And so, you know, how did he lie? Do you think he actually lied, or what happened exactly there?
Well, let me just say also, another issue is, you know, in when it comes to lies, if the lies, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm just going to give my best understanding. I have had discussions with lawyers about it. Forgive me if I'm not absolutely precise. But if somebody lies in a case about something that's not material or not relevant, let's say, not terribly relevant to the big picture. In other words, if he were a Russian spy and lied about something irrelevant, the lie wouldn't matter. If he lied about his age, for example, he wouldn't be charged with lying about his age because it didn't have to do with the spying. This is kind of like that, according to his supporters. He was charged with lying about something that's not a crime. You know, his contacts and content of the phone calls that he had. And I believe what they said he lied about was he said he didn't talk about sanctions in the phone call with the Russian ambassador, that he didn't address these things, that he lied to Vice President Pence about that, and that he lied to the FBI officials when they had this conversation, which he says he didn't know was even an investigation or an interview or an interrogation. So I think that was one of the main things at the heart of his guilty plea. But in normal circumstances, that would be such small potatoes if you had a criminal case and you thought somebody said something, they later said, oh, I forgot, or I didn't include something. That doesn't even count in most criminal cases. It's such a tiny thing, and it's also in the mind of the beholder whether they lied or just forgot to say something. But they made this the whole basis for a prosecution against Flynn. And I think it was pretty clear he had been targeted, especially with the handwritten notes and material that's come out that's been hidden for the past 3 years. We now see that they discussed targeting him and having precisely this happen to get him out of office.
Okay, well, so a couple of things. First thing, I think let's go with legal costs are so expensive. And when you're going up against the government, as you know, Cheryl Atkinson, they have unlimited amount of money and legal fees are so expensive. And this is my understanding has really almost bankrupt General Flynn in trying to protect himself. Is that accurate?
Yes. I mean, I heard he had to sell his house. The kind of money it costs, and I'm actually going after the Department of Justice. I'm not having to defend myself. I'm suing them for the government computer intrusions, and they won't hold their own accountable for spying on me. But I'm talking about, a couple conversations with attorney is thousands of dollars in one day. So if you can imagine General Flynn had this high-priced firm defending him initially, I have no idea what the bill would have been. But, yes, that can bankrupt you very quickly in a matter of weeks if they're doing, work and billables at how they do it. So that's just the way it is. And sadly, the Department of Justice has unlimited tax money, and they have some kind of, this has been the discussion of some articles, the Department of Justice in general has a huge win rate. In other words, when it prosecutes somebody, I think it's like 90-something percent, which is not because, analysts have said, they're always picking the right person to prosecute. It's because most people can't afford to defend themselves, and they end up pleading to something because their lawyers will tell them, you can't afford to fight this. They're going to get you for something, and they're going to take every penny you have and every penny your family has, plead to something small. And so I think that's the main reason, not that they don't have good prosecutions in there too, but I think a lot of them are for the reasons that analysts have described when they've written about this. Who can afford to go up against the Justice Department?
Well, and so then that takes us, I've always heard that he wanted to protect his son. And so I've tried to do some research on it, and he and his son, it looks like they were in business together. The son was starting a new family. General Flynn was looking at the cost of this, and so he goes ahead and pleads guilty to this one count of lying on something you said is basically immaterial to protect his son, because, again, now we're talking about the government, trying to protect yourself against the government. And that seems to me like the reason he was trying to protect his son financially. Am I getting to what you think happened?
Well, that's what I've heard through, the people he communicates with. I have not communicated with him directly about that. But, yes, that was a factor as well. And also, he agreed to cooperate with prosecutors. They recommended no prison time for him, by the way. This was such a tiny thing that, there was nothing related to Russia collusion, no Russia spying, none of the stuff they tried to taint him with. And after the course of cooperating with Special Counsel Mueller for many, many months, and in the end, Mueller found no American colluded with Russia, there was a turnabout where suddenly the Department of Justice, when he started saying he might want to withdraw his plea, suddenly they recommended jail or prison time for him and turned around on that. And that's when he got a new lawyer and tried to fight for his, to stay out of prison.
What do you think ultimately they were trying to do? And I guess that's conjecture, opinion. Have you come to any decision on that, Cheryl Atkinson?
Well, if you had asked me 3 years ago, a lot of the theories sounded far-fetched. But now, and I'm as surprised as anybody, that a lot of this turned out to be true and documented, well-documented. I think there was an organized campaign that included political figures and some in the intelligence community to fan out and controversialize President Trump and the associates with him, to find anybody around Trump that had ever been to Russia or had any Russia contacts so they could try to make the case, the weak case for wiretapping them so that they could capture President Trump's communications. so they could try to get something against Trump and taint him with this whole Russia collusion notion that was ultimately disproven. So I think it was a conspiracy to make sure he did not, among other things, come in and change and unearth what the intelligence community had been doing, some of which we know thanks to Edward Snowden and the other revelations. But I think there's still earth that has not been turned over yet, and they're terrified that, you know, a Bush could have come in and not changed things, a Clinton could have come in and not changed things, but they knew Trump and Flynn were not going to go the normal route, and that's what terrified everybody. Secondly, I think Trump was opposed even by fellow Republicans in many instances because he's not in that money wheel. So these money systems have been developed among both parties for many years, that if you want to get to the president, there are routes in both parties you have to go to get a favor, to be heard, to have a hearing canceled, to have a hearing on Capitol Hill scheduled. All this has been, you know, in the works for many years, and people pay through donating to the right people, corporations and special interests. Trump was outside that money system. Suddenly, if these special interests wanted a favor, they didn't know who to call. The people they've been paying all these years were not the ones that could get them to Trump or to the top officials to have a favor done. So I think upending the whole system the way it had grown to work in Washington was one main reason why Trump was a big target.
Okay, Cheryl Akison, this is absolutely fascinating. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Cheryl Akison, host of Full Measure, which is on Sundays. We'll be right back.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
Did you know Hooters wings can fly? That's right. Your favorite wings can be picked up for to-go and can even be delivered right to your doorstep. Take advantage of Hooters' delicious lunch specials, like our seaworthy Baja fish tacos, mouthwatering Western burger, or our new roasted wings. Lunch specials are available to go Monday through Friday from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Curbside service available. Place your order online at order.hooters.com. Get your wings to fly only at Hooters.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Monson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmonson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Monson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Monson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter and go over to Facebook and give us a like. I am so thrilled to be talking with Cheryl Akison. She's the host of Full Measure. It's broadcast on Sundays in a variety of different markets, ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, CW, or Telemundo, or online. And she's the managing editor, investigative reporter with that. Cheryl Akison, it is so great to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Let's continue our conversation regarding General Flynn. Now, you had interviewed him, I think, back in 2016, and you're indicating that ultimately Washington, D.C., as it had been operating for many years, all of a sudden realized that there was a new game in town with President Trump and then with Flynn working with him, and that there's going to be a lot of earth that's ground that's going to be turned over. So what do you think is happening in Washington, D.C. right now with all of this? Because you've actually interviewed, you had a great interview with General Flynn in 2016.
Well, I think where we are now is President Trump has been surrounded for these years, continued to be surrounded by people who do not necessarily support him in every case, and some who oppose him, even those of the same political party or who are working for him. And he's finally gotten a couple of people in a position where important information that should be public, that we own, that's important to us, has finally been unearthed and declassified, or is being declassified, because he's got someone as the acting head of the Director of National Intelligence, Richard Grenell, who's declassifying it after 3 years of nobody doing this. Material that was kept secret by the Inspector General in some cases, Horowitz, in some cases by other people who work for President Trump that directly relates to potential crimes committed by government figures in this period that we're talking about. So we're now starting to learn more about, such as these important handwritten notes in the Flynn case, who was doing what. Back to those notes that came out recently, they were high-ranking people within our government system before Flynn was interviewed, having a conversation and contemplating what the goal was of going and talking to Flynn. It wasn't to make sure they knew that the administration knew Russia might try to interfere with, you know, the government. It was to get Flynn. And the question that this government official asked himself in the handwritten notes was, what is the goal, truth or something else? Was the goal to, you know, perhaps trap him in a lie, I'm paraphrasing now, but was the goal to make sure they could get him fired or prosecuted? And mind you, this is after President Trump had been told by President Obama, don't hire Lieutenant General Flynn. So they were clearly very, very worried about him in particular, what he would do. In the big picture, I think they were worried about Jeff Sessions. They pulled him aside successfully very early on by accusing him of Russia collusion and getting him to recuse himself. There was an, you know, full-out effort when President Trump got elected, and panic, I think, inside the current administration as to what could be unearthed. And they pulled out all the stops trying to make sure key people were controversialized and removed.
So now that it looks like what the charges are going to be dropped, we're seeing a narrative of this is totally political. And for the, you know, the person that may not be paying so much attention to this, they're trying to paint it as partisan politics. How would you address that, Cheryl Atkinson?
Well, like everything else, I guess things are divided left and right. And I like to say I'm nonpartisan, but people will say, despite you saying that, if you come down on the facts one side or the other, they're going to accuse you of being on one side or the other. So I understand that, but I'm just shocked that some people, including traditionalists who would normally be horrified that law enforcement was taking these steps, that our FBI was doing what has been undisputably uncovered that they did, that they're excusing that by saying, well, he pled guilty to lying, as if, you know, the ends justify the means. And in our system, that's not how it works. You are not entitled to trick people into things. You're not entitled to target people, you know, decide who you want to get in prison or get fired and then build a case against them out of thin air. That's not, you're not allowed to do that in our system. That's illegal. But, you know, there, I hear so many people defending it now by saying, well, in the end, he pled guilty to something, therefore everything that happened to him was deserved. I don't know how to reconcile that, because logical thinking people shouldn't be, in my opinion, shouldn't be thinking that way.
Okay, so President Trump, you said that he was outside this whole money thing, and I had not really thought about how that was working in Washington, D.C. I mean, it's really has been an establishment. It's been a business, if you will. I mean, I can't quite believe it. And so Trump comes... Okay, Trump comes in, and you know what? What's so concerning about this is the everyday American who thinks that they are sending representatives to government to represent them really, I think, are hurt by this. And so Trump comes in. I think he realized that. And I guess a question for you on that is, why would this billionaire businessman, you know, who doesn't have to take all the arrows that he's taken, why do you think he stepped up to run for president, and it was shocking that he won? Because, I mean, they've been after him since before he even took the oath of office. So why do you think he did that?
I can only go by videos of him speaking through the decades, really, about how he cares about the country, what he thinks is wrong. He's experienced the inner workings because he has acknowledged he has bought favors by contributing to members of Congress. He knows how it works. And thinks that it's a corrupt or broken system. And, you know, there's a healthy dose of ego in there. He really thinks or thought he could do a better job than the people that he saw running for office. And I think, like you say, it surprised him too, but it struck a chord for people for the reasons we've discussed, him coming in as an outsider and calling the shots as he saw them. But I think people, it doesn't take long to explain to people, and I've had members of Congress, both parties, talk about this on my program, shockingly, because it's now an open secret. It's no longer that Congress is up there in general holding hearings, even those who may want to, holding hearings because it's in the public interest or because average Joe needs the hearing to be held. They're scheduling hearings now based on whatever special interest paid their leaders and their party the most to hold a hearing on a subject they want to be held a hearing on, but more importantly, to not hold hearings into certain things that they don't want hearings held on, because if you're on the Transportation Committee and you're a member of Congress, that's a money-generating machine for you, because you call transportation industry people and ask them for contributions. And in return, the unspoken conclusion is you won't hold hearings and you won't go after them and you won't regulate them strongly on things that are important to them. So the committees in Congress have been bought out by the very interests they're supposed to oversee. And this goes for the federal agencies. The intelligence committees protect the intelligence agencies when they do things wrong in many cases, because they get funded by defense contractors and all kinds of people that make money off the intelligence community. Every committee has its own interests that the members are making money off of and therefore not serving our interests. It's a strange and perverted extra constitutional system that's developed in the past decade and a half, two decades.
So Trump has come in, he's challenged this. Flynn knew where the bodies were buried, but we've continued on. Now it's 3 years, we're starting to have light being shed on this, but we're coming close to an election. And I guess just within the last day or so, former President Obama came out and I guess lashed out a bit on the fact that these charges have been dropped. Are we going to run out of time on getting light shed on this, Cheryl Atkinson?
Well, it's disappointing, I think, from a public accountability standpoint that it's taken so long. Look how quickly they threw the Texas salon owner in jail in a matter of, days or hours when they didn't like something she did. But when it comes to really big things, important things happening, constitutional violations and privacy violations in this country, years go by. We still don't know who unmasked, who improperly revealed the names of innocent U.S. citizens during campaign 2016 inside the Obama administration 4 years later. So will time run out? Even as we're making progress now and getting answers, it's a small slice of what could have been answered and could have been known by this time if government didn't work so slowly, if there weren't so many ways to obstruct and to stonewall. And I'm also afraid as time goes on, evidence is destroyed, stories are coordinated. It gets harder as time passes to get at the original truth.
Well, and we have about 4 minutes left on this interview. Cheryl, with President Trump, sometimes I can't believe he gets up every morning with everything that's going on, just with this, but now with the COVID-19 challenge, the economy is reeling. I mean, what do you see for our country right now, Cheryl Atkinson?
Gosh, I don't know. I really don't know what's ahead. I don't even know. This has upended everything. I don't know what's going to happen in the election. I think Trump still has strong support, although I know a lot of polls show Biden winning. I don't believe that's the case, but I'm also not a political analyst. This is just the feel I have from talking to people from various walks of life, and it feels a lot like it did before the last election to me when I predicted Trump was going to win. But I don't know. I don't know that that's the case. I don't know how coronavirus figures into how we move forward. I don't know how it gets in the way of the other things that the important things we need to know about what our intelligence community has been doing. And, people may think that only impacts a certain number of people, but if your country has a politicized intelligence agency that's spying on innocent people at will, journalists, other politicians, this is the biggest stuff to me. This has implications beyond maybe you may think at home, well, I don't care if they're looking at me or they're not looking at me. This matters because this could be anybody. This may not be always. The government in charge may not be friendly to you. The ones doing this may not always be friendly to you. And it means they can plant information. They can frame you. They can set you up. They can go to secretive courts and get wiretaps against you on the basis of false information. I think this is really big stuff, and I hope that we continue making progress on figuring this out.
Well, and if Trump does not win this election, then will it go back to business as usual in Washington, D.C., and that all of this will be covered up, do you think? Or what do you think might happen on that, Cheryl?
Well, I think if Trump were not to serve a second term, yes, we dial backwards. We kind of go to where we were, and there may be even efforts to dial back some of the things, some of the progress that was made toward what I see as getting answers and resolving things. I think it would go back more to business as usual.
Okay. Well, Cheryl Atkison, we've run out of time. I so appreciate these conversations with you because you are, you're really searching for truth on all of these different issues. You're the managing editor, investigative reporter, host of Full Measure with Cheryl Atkison, broadcast on Sundays. Cheryl, thank you so much, and let's stay in touch.
All right. Thanks, Ken.
And our quote for today is from Cheryl Atkison. She says, "The smear artist reveals himself by his disparate treatment of people and situations. He drapes himself in a superhero cape, claiming to defend the aggrieved. He pretends to right societal wrongs. In fact, though, he's motivated primarily by paid interest and his own selfish agendas. By definition, the job requires that morality and conscience be cast aside." And that is from Cheryl Atkison's book, The Smear, How the Secret Art of Character Assassination Controls What You Think, What You Read, and How You Vote. So today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.